thank you all very much for hanging in there. It's been an exciting time, and I really want to thank APHA for inviting Texas to come and share our experiences with you all regarding the work we've been doing for many years. And we've been very fortunate that we live in a state and with a health department that is truly integrated. We are the HIV, STD, viral hepatitis, and TB unit, and we have been for quite a few years. So that as we talk today, we're going to be talking about really building a comprehensive approach to implementing the national strategy. I have no disclosures to report. As you all know, we've seen this before throughout the last few days, and I hope since 2006, and it's especially familiar to those of us in the HIV and STD field, because when we saw this, we thought, woohoo, we have another way of identifying patients who have not been identified yet. But one thing that we didn't keep in mind is that this was the first outreach to medical providers to engage them who have not been part of the exceptionalist HIV community, which we all became engaged in way back in the 80s. And this was a reach out to the providers to say, treat, destigmatize HIV testing. Start treating HIV test as a standard of care. Add this as another way of assessing your patients in their overall health care. As a state health department, we began reaching out to the medical communities to educate them about HIV and AIDS and also the new recommendations. Now, since 2006, we did not see much uptake in this whatsoever, but we were hoping that this would remove barriers and get clinicians to start thinking about what does HIV testing mean to them. So we started shifting our language and started calling it screening. Because clinicians do screenings, medical care providers do screenings, so let's start thinking about doing routine screening for HIV. The National HIV/AIDS Strategy has been a call to act. Not since 1987 have we seen a reach out to an action for the nation. I remember back in 1987 when I began my career working with HIV and AIDS and Larry Kramer and ACT UP. Many of you may not even be familiar with the symbolism of silence equals death. We were bringing together grassroots communities, the gay community, because there was a pretty much the silence of addressing the HIV epidemic, to where our Surgeon General finally took a stand and sent out a flyer to all providers, to all people in our nation, to say, don't worry about mosquitoes. Now we have the National HIV AIDS Strategy, and this call to action is silence is equals new infections. As providers are not adding this to a standard of care, we don't see as much death, fortunately, but we see continued infections. So the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, as a state of Texas, we have looked at this as a renewed commitment to increase public attention and actually bring back the medical community to address HIV and AIDS and start treating this as a chronic disease, rather than the exceptional disease. And I remember why we had to do it back then. I was from Florida. The Ray boys were kicked out of their homes in Florida because they had HIV. We don't have as much stigma and fear and discrimination. It is now much more protected. However, the stigma, the fear, the discrimination, and the ignorance is within the medical community. And we are reaching out to that medical community and asking them to integrate this into their standards of care. So the response has been, again, reaching out to the medical community, educating them, performing what we call public health detailing, being an exhibitor like you see downstairs, to where we go to medical providers and we talk to them about routine screening, we talk to them about the new diagnostic algorithm. But it comes down to, are you going to do this the way we've always done it, by bringing in a separate tester and having someone test you separately for HIV? That's the way we all started it when we got the first funds of money from the CDC. Many providers, when they had the first round of funding for PS07078, was to add testing to healthcare communities. Many healthcare communities and providers hired an HIV tester. We found that this is ineffective, but also it is very labor and cost. It's very costly. Our state decided, when I talk about our state, we as the state of Texas is an overall jurisdiction, but we also have Houston as a separately funded jurisdiction. We have partnered and we've worked together to implement the model of routine screening as truly routine. It's added to your lab set. Your order set. It's truly integrated. It's part of your electronic health record. In our state, we can do true opt-out screening. Opt-out screening meaning you will be tested today. If not, we don't offer a test. Since 1997, we've been doing opt-out screening for pregnant women in our state. We've seen an incredible decrease of perinatal transmission, fortunately, and providers did not scream and yell about that. It's this, again, helping providers understand what opt-out looks like, sounds like, and how it can be integrated. And then sustainable. Well, what does sustainable mean? Why am I doing a separate type of test when I can just pull a few tubes of blood for you with your lab work and send it to the reference lab or my lab downstairs? Again, the costliness of separate testing makes it much less sustainable because, again, you have that separate tester. In many cases, we do need expedited testing, such as with pregnant women. And fortunately, the test technologies that are available in hospitals, in labor and delivery sites, are able to turn tests around in a few hours. So again, we've created this campaign, these campaigns, to help and publish them in medical journals to give providers, stakeholders, administrators the facts around routine screening. So since our activities, we began actually putting out funding for medical communities, and including emergency centers, community health centers, correctional health, and I am not talking about the prison. The prison in Texas is enormous. It's bigger than some of the states out there. Keep in mind that there are almost 26 million people living in Texas. We have over 77,000 living cases of HIV in our state. So we recognize that corrections, the local jails, the city and county jails, many times they are keeping inmates in their jails to serve out their sentences because our prisons are so full. We also approached and targeted family planning clinics, some STD clinics to help them expand their testing activities, urgent care clinics, and teen health clinics. We focused on high prevalence areas because we are an enormous state. We're not Delaware, no harm, nothing bad against Delaware, but it takes from Beaumont to El Paso, so Beaumont's very far on the east side to El Paso. That's about a 15 to 16 hour drive. So we focused, the darker areas are our higher prevalence rates. Now keep in mind these are rates. Some of these dark areas, like I wish I had a laser pointer right here, there's very few people living in these areas. It's what we would call No Trees, Texas. Very few people. So in the areas where you see the stars are among our top 15 prevalence counties, not only of our cases, but also the number of living cases. We set up a threshold. We started supporting hospitals and emergency centers, urgent care centers, community health centers, and all those other sites I was talking about earlier in these cities to help them implement routine screening as a standard of care. Our model was to identify champions within the healthcare setting, going to the physician, the doctor, the nurse, the administrator, the legal team member, the risk manager, the lab, the person that had an interest in this. Maybe they had a friend or a family member who had HIV or died of HIV. Maybe they had, when they were in med school, that was the most exciting course they had. Identifying that champion, and in that setting, for that champion to lead the way for implementation, to make the hard systems and operational changes, not just say, okay, we're going to start doing this, like you all have been doing with your electronic health records. That is effective implementation that makes it truly integrated. Lab-based testing, again, using your reference lab that you normally use for your other tests. Does your emergency center have a test down the hall? Can you just add this or downstairs? Can you just add this? Again, not exceptionalizing the test. Making those changes to information technology and electronic medical systems, and then creating strong partnerships with the HIV and public health follow-up communities. Throughout all of our work since 2008, what we have noticed is that care providers do not know about an ADAP program. They don't know about public health follow-up. They don't know about Ryan White programs because they've been so isolated, and we've been doing such a great job of carrying all this work on our backs. It's now to help them understand, and that helps buy-in. That helps them say, oh, you mean I don't have to worry about having to provide the care for the very for all the patients I'm going to identify? Well, actually, let's look at your case rates in your community. Although they're high, if you're above 1%, you're going to, you know, 0.1%, you're going to see 1 in 1,000. Giving them a reality check is very important. So again, more information, saying to them, early diagnosis and treatment. You are the clinician. You are the healthcare provider. This is what is your focus, your goal. This falls into what your job is. It's helping them understand that this is part of the reason why I became a healthcare provider. Our results. We're extremely proud, and I say this quite energetically and loudly, that we've done over 1.3 million tests since we started the program in 2008. And again, this is all of Houston as a separate jurisdiction. They work incredibly hard with our partners. We have over 34 actual sites, but when you look at brick and mortar, over 100 brick and mortar sites implementing routine screening as a standard of care. As you see, the majority of testing does occur within the emergency centers. And how about that? 1.1% is the overall positivity rate. What is the threshold for routine screening in healthcare settings? 0.1. It matters. You can diagnose infections. Now, the new positivity rate is significantly lower at 0.1%. Excuse me, at 0.5%. Well, you can say, well, Jenny, you know, you're not doing, you know, this isn't, you know, that great. Look at the targeted testing. This is better than not identifying the patients. And the overall, remember, threshold is 0.1% for all healthcare settings, all positives. This is well above that as well. What are these? Who's doing most of the testing? As I said, mostly emergency centers. Who's seeing most of the positives? Mostly emergency centers. And then we have the 15% is in corrections for positives and 7% is in community health centers. When it comes to race ethnicity in testing, we are in a state where about 13% of our overall population is African American or black, and about 4% is white, and then we have, I believe, it's challenging because now they're breaking it out as a separate race ethnicity, but it's 38% is Hispanic or Latino. So as you can see, of the overall test being performed, it is serving either Latino, African American, black, and then white population. It's almost half and half males and females of overall tests. Positives, it's not surprising. This is what we are seeing nationally. And this is not targeted testing. This is routine screening in healthcare settings. As we would expect to see, most of the positives are among the African American black community and also male. We know that in our state that over 76% of all of our positives are men. We need to reach healthcare settings where men are accessing healthcare. Where do men mostly access healthcare? In emergency centers or in corrections. So we are really pushing to increase supporting those emergency centers and adopting routine screening. Age, again, it's interesting. We see some bookends when it comes to age. We are finding youth who are infected, and we are finding the elderly. But again, the majority of people who are testing positive are between the ages of 25 and 34. Real-world patients, just real quick, 18-year-old male tests in a major emergency center. He tests negative. He comes in with stomach pains. 3 months later, he is still sick with stomach pains. At that time, they were using third-generation testing. He was indeterminate. They reflexed to a NAT, a nucleic acid amplification test. He was positive. We diagnosed an acute infection. This is not only impacts this person personally that we can get rescue therapy to help preserve their immune system, but also this means we can stop further infection. As we know, when I'm newly infected, I am much more infectious. 32-year-old male, 3 years of illnesses, multiple visits to two different hospitals. They finally implemented routine screening. and he tests positive. We don't know yet how long he's been infected. We haven't seen a CD4 viral load. And this is one of our favorite ones. 16-year-old African-American female. She is deaf, and she is an oncology patient. She visits to the emergency center because she is very ill. She's not feeling well. After her chemotherapy, they do routine screenings. She tests positive. They are able to coordinate her care with her oncologist. We later found out that her family had been hiding from her for years that her husband, their father, had died of HIV. These are patients that would not have been tested most likely until either, you know, they were extremely ill and someone finally took up a step and said, maybe I should test this patient. And these are just two. These are just two out of the 14,724 overall patients that have tested positive and the 6,000 that are new cases. Now, why is it that it's important that we keep this 14,000 in mind? Is again, because we know linkage to care, no matter when you're diagnosed previously or new, it's important that we help our patients get relinked into care. And this is where the education of these medical providers has been key, to help them understand that you do have a role and you do have partners out there, and your social worker can call, you know, Sammy Joe at the AIDS clinic, or you may have her embedded within your facility yourself. Our lessons learned is that obviously patients are walking through doors, they're not being diagnosed, they're not disclosing their diagnosis. You diagnose the patient and they say, well, wait a minute, my colleague Isabel, she used this in her talk earlier today. You know, I'm here for my chest pain, I'm here for a stomach ache. I didn't think it was important you knew I had HIV. You know. Leadership and management within the healthcare facility is crucial, and it must be that medical team's leadership and management. Lesson learned from us. Don't go to the AIDS clinic within the hospital to have them run this program. They don't manage what's happening within the emergency center. They don't have the authority to say, look, doctors, nurses, lab techs, you need to be drawing this blood. Go to the leadership who have the authority and are the decision makers within that setting. We need to make sure that we are supporting hard operational and protocol changes. We're supporting programs right now in updating their laboratory equipment so they can do fourth generation testing now. Or we're helping them, like you all did, or someone previously, negotiating with the different labs out there, Quest and LabCorp, to get them in a bidding war. Again, training, and retraining. It's so important that you make sure that you have information. I tell you what, the idea about the new algorithm and new ways of diagnosing patients is a big hook. People are interested in it. They want to know about it. And also HCV testing for the birth cohort. They want to know about it. They want to start testing. And also get your champions to talk to the folks who are dragging their feet and having a hard time. Again, these are more of our ads that we use that are in medical journals, talking about that those patients are walking through your doors and you're missing them. We have so many people to acknowledge their excellent work. My colleagues in the room today, Nikki and Nicole, and our previous dear colleague, Carolee, who's now with Florida. This has taken more than just our little HIV program in the state of Texas. This has taken many hospitals, community health centers, our friends with the CDC, Bernie Branson, our friends at other universities. So this is what we're doing out in Texas, y'all. Thank you.